Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I feel like it's getting weird now, like I'm some strange uncle that just keeps saying the same thing and not changing it. Anyway, I just hope you're generally okay. There's been some lovely supportive work on the Twitter this week, as there always is. If you do want to get in touch with us on Twitter or Instagram, it's at the Griefcast. Lots of people tweet me with queries about how to survive anniversaries or feelings they're having, and I just generally retweet them, and generally lots of other griefsters step in with much better, more brilliant advice. So if you are feeling a bit fed up with this week, it's quite a good place to quite a good corner of the internet to be in. Just a reminder, we have some live shows coming up on the 21st of July at 1 p.m. I will be at Latitude Festival at the Listening Post, which is the podcast tent. I'm going to be joined by some incredible stand-ups, Tez Ilias, Vanessa Hammock and Tom Allen of baking fame. So that's very exciting. Also the London Podcast Festival, September the 15th at 7 o'clock. It's going to be myself, Tom Parry and Jenny Bede and someone else as well. And I have another one coming up on September 26th in association with St. Thomas's Hospital as well. And tickets haven't gone on sale for that yet, so keep an eye out on the Twitter. But the other two are on sale, so please do come and see us talking about death. It's cheerier than it sounds. I just wanted to say as well, thank you so much for your incredible reactions to last week's episode. I really worried that actually people just wouldn't listen, because it just, if you read the blurb, I thought, oh, people might just be put off. But I've had some incredible emails from people. And one of the things I was really, really touched by people who are, you know, in the club and in the Child Loss Club, who were just really grateful to hear Jason and his story. And, you know, obviously it's not a story that's talked about enough. So just if you haven't listened yet, obviously prepare yourself. It is a hard episode, but thank you to everyone who did listen and really got something out of it. I know that Jason is an incredible human. This week, I'm talking to comedy writer and actor Barunka O'Shaughnessy. Barunka is an all-round incredible comedy renaissance woman. There is nothing she can't do. You may recognise her from such shows as Ed Reardon's Week, Katie Brand's Big Ass Show and The Mighty Boosh. She's also an amazing writer and script editor. She co-wrote Hunderbee with Julia Davis. She also co-wrote Time Wasters with Daniel Taylor. And she's worked on, oh my God, so many shows. Script editor Sally Forever, worked on Bucket with former guest Frog Stone. She's just someone who is extremely talented, to put it that way, an extremely funny lady. And she came in to tell me the incredible story of what happened with her father. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with gentleman scholar and acrobat,
as the Rinky Dink Panther.
Rinky Dink Panther. God, I love that theme tune. Sorry, you took me right back there. Actor, writer, comedian, Barunka O'Shaughnessy. But also, imagine, a scholar as well?
Oh,
is that true?
In a parallel universe. I always fancied myself in a library.
Oh, did you?
Beavering. Yeah. But then the reality was I'm just not very good at reading books and processing the information in them. I like it when other people tell me. I used to love lectures when I got up for them.
But do you have... Maybe I think this comes from being an actor. Like, I used to always think, oh, I'd love to be in a runner hotel. And then I was like, no, I'd like to be in a play where I run a hotel. Like,
pretend.
I want to pretend to do that. I don't actually want to sit in the library like with a quill.
Yeah. No, I would genuinely. But I just couldn't. I don't think I was made for that life. In my slightly arrogant head, I go, well, I could have done anything, of course.
Of course.
It's just the path I chose.
I have to ask you because... I'm sure everyone asked you, where's Barunka from?
Barunka is a Czech name.
That's so nice.
The Czech Republic, or Czechoslovakia as it was when I was born.
What does it mean?
It means tiny Barbara. Because I'm so tiny.
It means tiny Barbara.
It's because they basically sort of like to diminutize every name.
That's
they can't
amazing.
Bear a name straight, like you would be Karyanka or Karyadinka.
Oh, right,
Katinka. You know, they can't.
Like that Russian thing.
Yeah,
in books
exactly. It's the same thing. Yeah, they just can't bear a name straight. And there was a character in an old sort of 19th century novel, which is called The Grandmother, and the main character in there is this granddaughter called Barunka. But it's actually just a diminutive of Barbara. But you're not, in the Czech Republic, you're not allowed to christen a child Barunka because it's not official.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But here, because I was born in this country.
It's fine.
And then the other day I met a Czech woman who sort of laughed in my face and she said, I can't call you that.
Yeah.
That's a child's name. I was like,
that's my name. That's why I have a Karyad, because Karyad means darling. And it's like what you say
darling
is like,
one.
Oh, you're right, Kaliad. Nostar Kaliad. It's like, you don't call people it.
It's not actually a name.
No. And
it's
then,
like if you called your child, my darling.
Yeah, if I said my darling. I said,
my darling,
I met you and said, my name is Sweetheart. And you just had to deal with calling me Sweetheart. So Welsh people find it a bit difficult sometimes to say my name because it's like,
oh, God, I don't even know you. I don't even like you.
Exactly.
I'm not calling you darling.
I have to call you Kaliad. For God's sake, I just met you. A man once said to me, I'm not calling you it. It's what I call my wife. It's like, okay.
Well, what if your name was Jane and your wife's name was Jane?
I know, but I think for some people it means like my love. So it's like, and it was on a filming job. So I guess for him it'd be like, can you just stand over there? My love, my life, my light, the reason I live. Quick, get
what
some
did
light
he call
on
you?
Him. He just sort of said, stand over there.
Who are you?
You.
Lloydie.
Can you just move over a bit? And I'd be like, yeah, okay. It was just me, so it's easy. But so I understand why some people...
Yeah, have a problem with
like,
the...
Barunka. But you were born here.
Yeah, yeah. But my mother was very homesick at the time, so she gave me the Czechest name she could think of. My brother got away with Damien.
Oh, he's
so
Damien.
He can be Damo. He could be as English as he wants. Which he doesn't, because he moved to Sweden.
Wow.
Yeah.
So maybe if she'd called you like Jane, you'd be moving.
Maybe I would be somewhere.
Yeah, but you don't
else.
Need to. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Maybe it gives you a sense of more confidence.
It defines
identity.
You.
Yeah.
It really does. Like, I was never worried about having a weird different name. Obviously, it slightly defined me, and then I kind of. It could have gone one of two ways. I could have been very depressed about being different or embrace it and go, oh, well, I guess if I'm the freak, I'm the freak. Anyway, sorry.
Barunka, no, you
are... Nothing to do with death.
No, it's fine. It's quite nice. It's quite celebrate. So who are we remembering today?
We are remembering, in a strange way, my father.
Your dad. And what was his name?
His name was Seamus Augustine O'Shaughnessy.
What a name. Your family are dealing out good names. This is like, I feel like I'm getting...
He changed it to James, I think, quite early on in the day, because in the 70s in London, it wasn't that cool to be Irish.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
like now. yeah, no, you know, anyone in sort of flares and platform boots was sort of liable to be bundled into the back of a Black Mariah in question. No, so he changed it to James.
So how long ago did he die?
He died on the 1st of March 2015.
Okay.
And he died... just before his 70th birthday, and then my daughter, my only child, was born on the 31st of March. So wow. It was a real one out, one in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but the strange thing about the situation, and this is why it's kind of, it's sort of a bit different, I think, to sort of grief, but in a very different way, because I hadn't seen him for 37 years.
Wow.
Basically. And so when I was about two, my parents got divorced, and then he was sort of around, but not really around. And my mother consciously sort of kept him away under the direction of her mother, who was sort of the matriarch who controlled everything from afar, even though she was in Prague.
She was in Prague. She was still managing the family.
Not even with a phone, because they didn't even have a phone.
That's
controlling,
isn't
it? Yeah, incredible. And she sort of swooped over, I think, when I was a baby and kind of really hammered the old nail into the coffin of their marriage.
It is done.
It's done. Get away from this
human,
this subhuman. I didn't see him. Also, all my life I'd just gone, I just don't have a father. And
so
my mother had various boyfriends
that
came in and out of our lives. But no one that I would be attached to. And I just assumed, I was like, but I don't miss it because I didn't have it. Do you know what I mean? Those sort of things. And
Did you know where he was? Did you hear from him at Christmas or birthdays or anything?
No, never. My brother got a few cards and then they sort of tapered off. We always had rumours that he was nearby. But we never knew. So my mother never made the effort. She could have done if she'd just sort of... Because social services, basically, they try and track fathers to make them pay.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they don't, then you have to sort of live off state benefits and all that kind of thing. But my mother never gave them his national insurance number because her mother was saying, keep him away, keep him away.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so you know, she was quite active in her own passive way of removing him from our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
So didn't hear anything. And then always... this conversation would come up with my friends who had very lovely relationships with their fathers, who'd go, but why don't you try and find him? And I'd always go, but he should be finding me.
Yeah.
And then my brother would sort of, he was much more tentative. He's much more kind
Is he older or younger?
He's old. He's 4 years older.
He
had more of a relationship with him.
So he sort of remembers him a bit more.
Hence, he would get cards and would have things here and there and sporadic contact. And then my mother would go, oh, I wonder where he is. What does he look like? He had this salt and pepper hair, you know. So you can't get any sense out of her.
Right, okay.
You can't get any straight answer.
The only time, where is he?
Yeah, like what happened? Where is he? Oh well, you know. And so then the only time I've ever seen my mother actually process a thought and for it to land emotionally was when I said to her, "Look, do you remember how much you loved your father?" And she did. She absolutely adored him.
Yeah.
I was like, imagine not having one of those in your life. And just for the first time, she just looked like a tiny, startled child. And it actually landed. But that was the only conversation where I could actually get through in any way. So it was this kind of big question mark. But because it's not there.
Yeah. So you don't miss it. Yeah, because you don't know it.
And then I didn't pursue. And I didn't. And always, you know, with this kind of, I suppose, emotional caveat, thinking, well, what happens? You know, it's going to be disappointing, of course, because he's the sort of person who hasn't tried to find you.
Yeah.
He's not scaling, like, the London Eye wearing a Spider-Man costume. You know, he's opted out.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
whatever reason.
Made his choice, and that's fine.
And then, when I was 5 months pregnant, I got an email from my agent saying, there's a solicitor who's been trying to get in touch with you. Shall I just give her your number? And I was like, okay.
Oh, shit. Yes, what have I done?
No, but I think I was always... I guess I was always somehow ready on some fundamental level. I was waiting for something like this. Because, as I said, my brother lives in Sweden, so he's sort of uncontactable. And I guess I was the most Googleable of all of them because I have an agent online who has my name under her.
Yeah. And also, unusual name.
Yeah, sure.
So there's only one. It's not like, is that Jane Smith? Are you my daughter? I was like, yep, Bronco, shock in the scene.
Shock in the scene.
That's mine, yeah.
So anyway, this woman rang and, I rang her. Anyway, I just remember having a proper, like I've only had two panic attacks in my life and this was one of them where I had to sit down and I was just like, because she said, your father's been in touch and he's looking for your brother.
Oh, amazing. Thanks, Dad.
He's looking for your brother. The thing is, he's dying and he wants to leave a small estate. I mean, in the end, it was very small, so don't get excited about that. And I was like, oh, okay, gosh. does he want to see me at all? Is he interested in me? Anyway,
Yeah. My family are classic for that. Like the men, it's like my brother's 4 years older, and there's always that slightly like, oh, your brother's. We're trying to get hold of him, and also he moved abroad as well. So then sometimes I noticed once he moved abroad, people started calling me because it's like, well, she's here, we can get hold of her.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you always feel a little bit that younger sister chip is always there, isn't it?
Yeah, like the prince.
Yes,
the prince is away, we'll have to deal with the sort of the add-on.
Yeah, the that other one that was in the room at the same time,
the backup sibling. The spare.
I know that feeling of like, oh, now I'm here, am I? I definitely wasn't here for about 20 years. Okay, fine. Yeah, so then you said, does he want to see me?
Well, so then there were sort of layers of complication. So she said, oh, well, he's dying. He hasn't got very long to live. And so he's getting in touch ostensibly for practical reasons to dispose of his estate.
Yeah.
But obviously he was, you know, reaching out, you know, in a way. I said, oh, so, you know, does he want to meet up? You know, should we get together? And da, da, da. She went, well, okay, let me get back to him and I'll get back to you. And then she rang me again and she said, oh, I shouldn't do this. I'm a legal representative. Oh, God, I hope I don't get her in trouble. But she was incredible because she said, the thing is, he's got throat cancer and
wow.
He can't speak because he's had a tracheotomy, he's had his voice box removed. He can't talk.
Oh, my God.
And she said, my father died of the same thing. And so I just wanted to let you know that if you do meet him, it's quite shocking. And
yeah. Well, that's amazing.
She was amazing, yeah, because she said, I shouldn't say this, but, you know, he didn't ask me to convey this. So this is me adding an extra bit, but I just thought you should know all this. And I was like, oh, right, okay, fine. But anyway, so we sort of, he wrote me a letter. That was the first step. And bearing in mind, I was 5 months pregnant and I was very sort of hormonal, emotional, which was a good thing in the end because actually I'm not normally.
It probably made you a little bit softer.
Plugging it up. Going, I don't care. I feel nothing. But this meant that I could actually sort of go, oh my God, all the feelings. And then, so he wrote this sort of, I mean, I interpreted it as a slightly tragic letter because he was just saying he lives on his own in this flat and he can hear the sound of cricket from the cricket pitch nearby, which happens to be in Teddington, which is where I lived basically all my life until I went to university. We lived 2 stops down the line, down the train line. And he had lived in Teddington the entire time since the divorce. So he'd lived in the same place.
Oh my God, so he was just around the corner, you didn't know.
He was around the corner. I'm sure my mother had an inkling, but just sort of fudged it. And so this was one of the ironies of the whole setup where you go, you were so close.
You were so close.
And
for
I even
so
went to
long.
Sixth form college in Richmond College, which is in Twickenham, which is basically about 5 minutes from where he was living.
Wow.
So anyway, that was one interesting detail. And then eventually we started texting each other because the problem was that he couldn't speak. So
yeah, of course,
I couldn't
that's
really
huge.
Pick up the phone or anything like that. So we were texting and my brother joined in at this point.
Of course. Now you've done the hard work. In he comes.
Well, he sort of did join in. He wanted to know, obviously, we just had loads of questions.
Yeah.
We wanted to know his side of the whole story. And it wasn't a million miles from what we had sort of worked out, gleaned between my grandmother's barbed comments about him and what a terrible loser he was and a shocking waste of space. I mean, he was, all those things.
But yeah, he's still your dad, isn't
he? Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was the sort of disconnection. That was the thing of like, this is my father, right, okay. That doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
Like, this is the person who made me or... Because unless you're there, it's like, what is it? But yeah, so... But still, obviously, it had an emotional impact. And then...
Was he... Like, when you were asking his questions, did you get kind of... Did he say sorry? Or did you feel like you got...
He never went there because it's not a film.
Yeah.
It's not a Hollywood movie, so we never had. We touched upon it in the texts, but in the end, no one ever said the thing that they should say or need to say. Ever because it was too. Also because of the type of person he was anyway, and his story and how he ended up there. Without us and all that kind of thing. So, but we did find out really interesting angles on how they met. What the real story was, all the timing, and the fact that he didn't know me as a baby.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting because that's not the story I'd got. I basically got taken off. My mother took me to Czechoslovakia, as it was then, and basically left me there.
Wow.
Came back with my brother to sort out this divorce, you know, that she'd been sort of sent by her mother. Go and sort it out. I'll look after the baby. And so he never actually knew me. So that sort of...
So that's why he
kind of... The disconnection
was
palpable because he never knew me. He might have seen me. He said when he did eventually see me again, I cried and said I don't want him, which obviously children do.
Yeah,
because he
yeah.
was obviously a bit sort of a little bit of a broken person. He couldn't quite deal with it and go, no, I'm the father. I'm responsible. I will yeah. make you love me as you do with your children
and
when they're
so
being difficult.
It's so hard when there's not that bond, because if you've been taken. Yeah, you kept away from him then.
Yeah, I was a stranger. I was a stranger.
You're both strangers to each other.
Yeah.
I love stuff in the past. Like, you completely understand why someone says, this is a good idea, I'll take the baby, you go and sort out.
Also, it's the 70s, so yeah. actually travel is incredibly difficult and expensive, especially yeah. to the Eastern Bloc, which is still behind an iron curtain.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite complicated getting there, even though legally we were British citizens, we were born here, and in those days you got a passport if you were born
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And my mother was an Irish citizen, bizarrely, because she couldn't get British citizenship. So she was Irish. And Czech, so she had dual nationality, which even in those days was possible. And so actually the complication and the effort and the expense, and they were very like breadlined, didn't have any money, obviously.
Yeah.
So there was no dashing back and forth.
Yeah,
on the
you just couldn't do it.
It was impossible. And
yeah.
either that or you'd have to get a train, which obviously took about 3 days. Anyway, it was interesting. It was as travel should be. It took a while.
Yeah, yeah. You had to,
and it was an effort.
Yeah, to mean it.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. So if you meant it, you meant it. So anyway, that was... the main reason we didn't ever have a bond, as you say, or a relationship, because I just wasn't in his life as a
yeah,
child.
Yeah.
And then
what did
was
that,
hard
did
was
that from... help? Did you feel a bit like, oh, that explains why
yeah, totally.
He wants to contact my brother, he sent my brother
yeah,
cards.
Yeah, it did, yeah. it did. Because after the initial, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What about me? I'm the baby daughter. Oh, because the other thing that my grandmother had spun, and she was quite an arch manipulator mm. and a total narcissist and a bit of a nightmare. She basically used to say... She used to make guilt trip me when I was a kid, saying how horrible my father was to my brother because he favoured me because I was a soft baby. So she gave the impression that I was like this
wow.
sort of pampered baby princess.
Yeah, yeah.
Who had caused a ruction in the relationship between my father and my brother.
Oh, my God.
So that was my weird guilt that I already had anyway. It was like, yeah. oh, I'm such a beloved baby child.
I ruined
my
this.
Father that
yeah.
I ruined the relationship. Obviously, then the reality was had absolutely no clue about me.
And that was obviously her way of trying to soften the fact.
I don't know what she was doing.
You don't know,
she was
yeah.
just being a bitch, basically. I mean, she really was. I mean, she had her reasons. Sure, you can unpack that, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Down the line, you know, don't spin that shit to your tiny children to guilt trip them. But mainly she was campaigning for us to not miss or want our father in
yeah,
our lives.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To try and be like, no, you know, he loved you, but that's... You
no,
know,
he
it's
wasn't
your fault.
Good enough.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, he wasn't good enough for anyone.
Yeah.
Because nobody was good enough.
Yeah.
Because she was a massive fucking snob. So, yeah, so eventually I suggested we meet up because he was dying.
Yeah.
And in the letter he went, oh, you know, what a shame about your timing. Or rather, no, he said, you've left it a bit late. And I thought, what's he fucking talking about? What? And he meant the fact that I was pregnant meant, and I was only 5 months, like, he wouldn't see the baby is what he was saying. He wasn't going to be around long enough because
yeah.
he'd been given whatever short time to live. And, anyway, so I went. So we arranged to meet, and I said to my brother, "Oh, are you going to come over? Come over and meet your father."
Yeah, yeah.
Who you haven't seen for 37 years. He went, "Yeah, a bit busy at the moment." you know, he's dying.
Yes,
you know, he might die
he's dying.
Any minute. He went, yeah, yeah, I've just got quite a lot on.
Do you think he just couldn't handle it? Basically?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's not the most emotionally evolved. And he would happily admit that as well. Like, the feelings are very, very
right,
buried.
So deep down that it was like, I'm fine by this,
of
but I'm actually quite busy.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll have to miss him dying. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like,
but I think
okay.
it was terrifying for him
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was terrifying for me. So I went to meet him. I had to meet him on...
So you had to meet him by yourself?
Yeah.
That's hardcore.
Well, my friends offered to come with me.
Yeah.
Tom offered. I went, actually, do you know what? This is not for anyone else.
Yeah.
This is like... This has just got to be me.
Yeah, I got
if my brother were here, great, bonus.
Be real nice.
To come and help his pregnant sister get through it. So I went to meet him, and I was, obviously, because I was pregnant, I needed to wee all the time. I went to a pub and sort of sat there going, oh my God, I've got to go meet him. Will I recognise him?
Yeah.
I've got photos of him, sure. But and then he was on, we met on Teddington Green, just because it was like a neutral space.
Yeah.
And it was, when would it have been? It was October, I think. And I recognised immediately because he looked like my brother. He looked like a mini brother. Like
wow.
He was like a sort of shrunken, slimmer version of my brother.
God,
it was extraordinary.
So weird.
And he recognised me because I look a bit like my mum.
Wow.
not as glamorous as beautiful as her, obviously.
But how weird to be like, oh, that's my family.
Oh, and that's my farm.
Yeah.
And it was like...
And pregnant as well. That must have been so overwhelming.
Yeah, so it was. But again, as I say, in a good way, because the shock and the whatever it was, if it was elation or relief, it felt like relief, actually, in the end, when suddenly this question, this unanswered question was answered. But I never even knew it was a question.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know this person was missing and all this piece of the puzzle was missing. And then it was. And it was like, I feel relieved.
It's so weird, isn't it? It's so weird.
I know. Like, and that's why I was thinking, poor people who don't fucking know.
Yeah.
It's such a fundamental thing. Who made you? And to go through life without having that question answered is. Anyway, it felt like...
Well, you prove, like, you can. You can absolutely go for, like, and it's fine. But when it is answered, there is a part that's like...
There's something that you didn't know.
Kind of felt like I needed that, maybe in a way I didn't quite realise.
Yeah. And then, so, yeah, emotionally everything was sort of... It was playing out correctly.
Yeah.
I was in a state of sort of high hormonal reaction.
And when you're pregnant, you have to be so open, I think.
Yeah.
You're growing this thing that's pushing you out, like literally physically pushing you out. And you have to kind of, all midwives say this, something like, you have to open yourself to get this baby out. Like those hips got to open, everything
got to
open.
Well, they never opened for me, but you know.
Same.
But I felt emotionally open.
Yeah, but you do have, you do sort of, it does put you in a very weird place where things are like, especially if you're someone who's normally like tough and fine
and don't
I'm all right, actually, I don't need that.
Yeah.
So you see him just walking towards you, and then what happened? Did you just sort of sit down?
For a cup of tea in the cafe, and he made a real sort of show of ordering, even though and he was wearing he looked very smart. I always remember that was one of my mother's very useful character descriptions that she provided, which was, oh, very well dressed. Very nice. We used to make these neckerchiefs. I mean, you know, that's the kind of detail I got from her about him.
Right, okay.
And he was very, very smartly turned out and was obviously sort of trying to prove that he was capable and
fine,
and asking for a cup of tea. And then he had to, because it's such a weird thing. I mean, you cannot Google this stuff enough. Like, obviously, I did try and find out what is this condition, what does it do to you? But no one tells you the detail. Like, there are no details about it, probably because it's fucking grim.
Yeah.
So he has no, you know, a tracheostomy. Basically, you can't swallow, you can't breathe. You've got a little pipe in your in that bit there, that whatever it's called, like in The English Patient, when you go, what's this bit called? It's on the woman's neck.
Oh, yeah. That, like, your dip.
Under your Adam's apple is where they stick the pipe to breathe through.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're breathing through a pipe. So when you're drinking tea, for example, and he had a cup of tea, he would drink it and then spit it out. So you get the flavour, or you get whatever.
Wow.
Whatever's left, you know, of your taste buds and things, then you get that, and so it's just going through the motions of enjoying your drink. But you have to keep spitting because obviously you can't swallow your spit, so you're constantly spitting.
Oh my god!
Into a cup. But he was kind of, he was cool about that. He didn't mind so much that, you know, I would see it. Again, it's that strange intimacy of going, this is your, like, this is my father. Mm. I'm his child, and even though I've never met him before, I do feel oddly not comfortable because I was shitting myself. I was so nervous, and also it's quite stressful speaking to someone who can't speak.
Yeah, yeah.
But yet at the same time, there's you could tell he could be comfortable doing those things in front of me because he was my father.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? You're in that land of stranger but not stranger. Like,
it's
but
really
you should
odd.
By rights. You know, be someone you walk past on the tube and have not very awkward around.
How easily that would have. That's I used to imagine that as especially when I was at college in Richmond College. I knew vaguely he'd lived in that area, so I wondered if I would ever sort of walk past him or bump into him. And I don't know if he ever thought that. Certainly not about me. I'm sure probably about my brother. And then that was the only time we touched upon any sense of sort of responsibility, and I was sort of babbling on, going, oh yeah, my mother always used to say I should try and find you. And he wrote down, because he had to write a lot of stuff as well, and he went, no, my responsibility. So he did take responsibility, he just didn't do anything with it, he didn't have the agency to act on it.
Wow, that's amazing that he wrote that, though. That must have been like quite
I think
again, like a question answered of like, oh, you did think about it,
you did think about it, and I understood. Like, I'd always had a sort of, weirdly, I'd had a grasp of his character without ever having met him, from what my mother had said, obviously from what my grandmother had said, because I worked out in my teens that she was full of shit. And that's when we fell out because we used to be so close.
I was going to say, were you really close before?
We were massively, like she was, you know, because she'd partly raised me because I went to live there a few times with her. And, you know, she was an incredible mother to a small child. But as soon as you have any sort of
questions,
that's it. The relationship sort of was scuppered by the fact that I went, you're not a good person.
That's not okay.
Yes, I am. Yeah. So I had a strange sense of what he would be like and why he would shirk responsibility and why he was just like a wastrel.
Yeah.
A life of nothing.
Did you find out what he'd been doing?
Very little.
Wow.
He did talk about when he was a carpenter and he helped build the Pete Townsend studio.
Wow.
But I don't think that lasted very long.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I did get to the bottom of it because basically how it then panned out was my brother eventually came over for Christmas and we had a slightly sort of sweet but tragic Christmas Eve where he cooked for us and he would always cook for me. That was his thing then because I would go and visit him. I mean, I would drive. I had a car then. I used to drive from southeast London to southwest London and visit him on a sort of Saturday or Sunday.
So almost weekly?
It did become that. But then...
So going from nothing
so
to
from
like...
nothing, yeah, because I thought, well, he's dying.
And
that was very helpful, actually, the fact that he was dying, because I could forgive him most things.
It puts a very quick timeline on everything, doesn't it?
It's why should I resent you? You're going to be dead soon and you might as well just sort of try and pack in the experiences. And I think he was trying to... By cooking, that was the one thing he could do.
Oh, God, was that's cook so for sweet. Us.
And he used to make some funny recipes. And he, I mean, God, when I went through all these things, like I found that this little printout from the library, we'd gone to the local library to find a recipe to make for me. And, you know, these. And then one of the last times I met him, he was going, I won't be able to make you any more things. How did he put it? Basically, this was his gesture, was to cook. And he cooked, when we went round for Christmas Eve, he cooked sort of gammon and it was like a real proper British Irish.
Yeah.
You know, good stolid sort of.
Pineapple on there or just
no
just
pineapple?
Gammon.
That's too fancy, is that
it? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he cooked and he enjoyed serving it up and he took great pleasure in the fact that we ate our food, which was, there were these sort of little moments of obviously what you would do with a child, which is kind of, he was pleased that we finished our meals and said thank you and.
Oh. Been raised properly, politely,
remarkably, considering the beasts that raised us.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast. With Carrie Adloyd.
I mean, then the thing we did find out was that he had this horrible kind of cold upbringing and classic sort of Irish Catholic Christian brothers. He was beaten by nuns at the age of 5 at school.
Oh, God. You know,
spare the rod and spoil the child.
Yeah.
And his mother had breast cancer and had to leave the house, go off for treatment, which bankrupted them. So for 2 years he had no mother and he had these older sisters who were very sweet and a horrible father. And you just go, oh, everything you're telling me is so sort of such a textbook kind of cold, loveless.
Yeah.
Where is the love? How can you possibly show love unless you know, you really sort of turn yourself around and meet the right person? He met my mother, unfortunately. She's a great, funny, entertaining human, but she can't go deep. And
well, then that's ironic.
She's very frustrating.
They found each other then, isn't it? Both people who were
And it was the 60s as well.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the really entertaining part of hearing his side of things, was this you know, the 60s in London. You go, fuck, you were at the epicentre of fun. And after the generation after the war, they didn't want to think about real life or reality.
No.
And he wanted to get wasted, basically. He moved in with these Oxford graduates who introduced him to, like, speed and acid.
Oh, my God.
And that was it. He never worked again, basically.
Wow.
He just got fucked. Obviously, booze, you know.
Yeah.
He's Irish. You can lay off it. Booze and fags. And that's what did for him, clearly, because
he had
throat cancer from smoking. But that was his sort of ethos, was coming from this terribly depressing, love-free environment, Limerick, you know, in the 50s. Christian Brothers thrashing you. And he knew from day one that God was a load of bullshit and was sort of quite forthright about it, which doesn't go down well.
No, the Christian Brothers do not like that. That's a big no-no with them.
So, yeah, which is why we were never christened, actually, originally, because he was so sort of anti the whole thing.
Wow.
Which I'm quite grateful for.
Yeah.
So I sort of, I guess I gleaned this somehow over the years. So I had a feeling that that's what he was about, that he couldn't take responsibility. And obviously because I saw it in my mother as well, who's not dissimilar. No work ethic. No desire to go out and prove anything.
Yeah.
Just quite bitter and angry, but quite eloquent. And then... not that I knew, because I couldn't speak to him, because he couldn't express himself. He didn't have any friends. He had no partner.
And no connection with his family?
No. Wow. His mother had kicked him out when he went back with... after he divorced my mother, she couldn't deal with it because she's Catholic. She was like, the shame. And he went over to visit her with his sort of long-term girlfriend, and she said, get out. So he severed contact with her.
Wow.
So that's a trait that I inherited without realising. Very good at severing contact with members of my family.
Got the DNA.
Yeah, the severance DNA. And I said to him, well, you know, like, where are your mates sort of thing? Like, and he said he just, you know, once you don't have a voice, like, he couldn't...
Oh, yeah, of course.
He couldn't express himself. And I think his social scene was probably down a pub, you know.
Yeah.
And as I went through his effects afterwards and found all these sort of these bizarre photographs of people in pubs, you know, in the old days when someone would come in with a disposable camera and take loads of pissed shots, and then you'd sort of give out some copies. And, but that was it. That was sort of the catalogue of his life.
Wow.
But there was a very bizarre... So when I went... Anyway, fast forward, I went through his phone afterwards and I sort of thought, oh, maybe there'll be some friends there. And there wasn't. There was only one person. It was an ex-girlfriend. And I got in touch with her, actually, after he died. And she was great. She had lots of nice things to say about him. So she put a really good angle on it.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't know anyone who knew him.
God,
no one.
Amazing.
He had no one in his life. Absolutely no one. And that was the bit when I was pregnant that used to make me just sob and sob. And then I would go and see him, but it was a real effort. And I had to do all the talking. And he was getting weaker and weaker.
Oh, my God.
And I would say to my brother, oh, please come over, please. And he didn't want to. I think for him it was a lot more complicated because he had palpable memories and bad memories of when they were splitting up and how angry my father was. And he was an angry person, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then also having come back with your mum to deal with that situation, that must have been, you know, like you said, it's hard that you weren't there, but you were also, the reason you weren't there is that people were shielding you from things. So you're in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
And your brother's like a four-year-old. But like, you remember stuff when
six,
you're four.
Yeah.
Or six, yeah.
Six and older. Because he would go and see him. He carried on sort of trying to see him even after they were divorced. And then it just sort of, again, it petered out. And then apparently my father heard someone in a pub go, oi, oh, your missus got married. Because my mother did get remarried for about a year.
Okay.
And at that point he just went, right, that's it.
That's it.
They don't need me. Well, my son doesn't need me, he's got a new father. And it was from that very sort of childish, you don't want me, I don't want you. And then that was it. There was no, he couldn't,
couldn't
get
see the
beyond
bigger picture
and go,
I am the dad, of course they need me. Like,
but this ex-girlfriend who I met afterwards, who, you know, she's our parents' age basically, but she's quite amazing. She said, oh, he did used to cry about it. Like, they'd have these boozy, because they were all boozers.
Yeah.
They had these boozy nights where he would get upset about it, mainly about not seeing my brother. But he never did it. He never acted on it. And he was sort of crippled by his sort of stunted emotional development.
Not having, yeah, and like you said, not having any experience of it as a child or
of love, yeah,
what it's like to,
what is love?
And not having a mother that forgives.
Yeah.
So then there's just no forgive. There's no like,
a
oh,
cold,
we can work through this. Like you've
cold,
upset
bitter
me.
Mother.
Yeah, that's it's so sad, isn't
it's a
it?
Really, yeah, it's such a sort of depressing picture where you go, how is there no light in this in this history? How is that possible that no one could take pleasure from their children?
Yeah.
And you know, I've obviously had when I had a child, I felt quite depressed and I was down about it and I could see the negatives, but you go, there's this overriding sense of responsibility that doesn't let you show them that, and you have to put a happy face on. Even though you're faking it, you go, and I'd often think,
can she tell I'm faking it because I'm grinning like a loon?
But you go, that love, you go, what is, how is that, how is it possible not to love your child and to actively send them off to some nuns that are going to beat them? I mean, to be so steered by the culture that, that you can't let go.
Well, it's just that thing, that generational thing, isn't it? It's so hard sometimes to imagine. And I always try and think in 20 years' time, you know, when our children turn around and go, how the fuck were you, why was everyone doing that? And you'll be like, we just didn't know that was the bad thing.
But it still goes on and it always will. It's conformity. It's conformity. It's trying to conform. And in that struggle to conform, you're shitting on your own people, basically, because what's more important is the public image of you from the outside, for strangers. What do strangers think? And it was on both sides of my family, actually, that weirdly, it turns out, now I know the other side of it more. There's this, this terrible pressure to appear to be doing the right thing. Anyway, but he didn't, and he actively rebelled against that, as did my mother, really, in a way. They both ran off to 60s London and went crazy.
Well, you can see why they found each other and why, for that moment, it was...
for a moment, it was exciting.
Yeah, and, like, they kind of sound like they're coming from similar backgrounds.
Very,
and similar.
But they
issues,
couldn't articulate it.
Yeah.
They're not, sort of, I suppose, developed in the sense that we have... We're allowed to talk about these things now. We have a bit more, kind of, even if it's pop psychology, it's better than nothing, because they had no way of... understanding,
no knowing,
and unpacking
yeah.
any of this.
Yeah.
But anyway, this girlfriend who I got in touch with after he died, she told some funny stories. She basically said that he was a very entertaining drunk. He was like one of those ranting, crazy, but quite eloquent Irish drunks. Except he didn't sound Irish anymore because he lived here for so long. So anyway, that was kind of a little image of what he would have been like. The fun side. But I suspect, you know, as a whole, it wouldn't have been a useful role model.
No, well, it's that thing of like the myriad of relationships that a human being has, of like, I'm sure if you met him and he's not your dad, you know, you met this man in the pub and he's telling you this hilarious story and he's funny, he's great and he's pissed, you walk away from him. But when that man's your father, becomes that goes from comedy to tragedy, doesn't it? It's like, oh, that's painful now. So yeah, it's such a different... So you're visiting him.
So I was visiting him and
your brother does eventually...
He does eventually turn up.
Yeah.
And it's quite... spooky, because when they meet, they are sort of, they look so much like each other.
That must be so weird.
And but they're both sort of emotionally repressed people, so there's no sort of although I did once embrace my father warmly and then he went because he had throat cancer and I'd squashed his neck. I mean, he didn't make that sound because he couldn't.
Ew,
he went
that's
quite
happen.
Embarrassing.
No, but no one ever talks about it. Those things happen.
No,
you can hurt people with cancer when you try and hug them.
I just couldn't get my head around the cancer as well. I was like, what is it? How does it kill you? Obviously, I asked him that. I was quite able to ask that, and he said he didn't really want to know. Some people don't like to think about impending death.
Yeah.
I did ask, and I went with him to a hospital appointment once, and I drove him there across Richmond Park, which was quite beautiful, and he... had a sort of memory of because he'd always lived around there, obviously, and that was really quite lovely. He told me off of speeding, and then we parked up, and he gave me some change for the parking meter, and I went, I won't need that much, because I didn't realise the appointment was for hours.
Yeah.
And he sort of got grumpy with me. It was a little inkling of how moody and sort of volatile he could be. And then as we were crossing a road, someone sort of edged out with their car. To stick at them and went there. I was like, oh, okay,
there
it is. There's a man with issues for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sat with him and went in to see this nurse, and it was right at the end where the terrible thing of throat cancer, like, it's just this growing, it's just growing flesh. It's such a weird thing. You go, why does it hurt? Why is it so painful? It's just cells multiplying. And he thought he had this pipe the obviously the windpipe needs cleaning out or whatever, because you can't cough as properly as you can when you've got a throat. When you've got a pipe instead of a throat. And he'd even brought these little sort of this tool, and he was asking the consultant to sort of clear it out for him. And I realise now what no one was saying was like, that's your throat closing up, basically.
Wow.
That's your cancer squishing your throat.
Fuck.
And that's why you can't breathe at night. And I asked the nurse, and they were all a bit surprised to see me, because he'd obviously had all these operations
and no
with
one
no one
there.
Coming
yeah.
with him, no one coming to see him or visit him. And suddenly he's got a daughter. I was like, you know, I wanted to explain. It's not that I was blanking.
Yeah,
I would have come.
Whoa.
If I'd been invited.
Yeah, I did not know about this situation.
Do this.
Yeah.
So I was a bit like, I can't start going into that now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
A little bit of judgment in the
eyes
of the nurse.
Oh, turned up now, have you?
Yeah. Oh, right at the last minute to collect your reward, your vast estate. But I remember asking the nurse, like, what happens? Like, how does it kill you? And she went, oh, basically, just kind of, it just squashes everything. So, like, you're eventually the blood supply to your brain and your breathing, everything just goes because it's just overgrown with cells. And anyway, so that was good to know. To know these things.
Yeah, no, I think everyone's different. Sometimes you just want to know what the fuck's going on.
I did want to know. And he was quite prosaic about it, which was pretty admirable. I think in a way that you obviously have to deny it, really, the reality. And you're just constantly taking care of your body. And it's just, you know, pumping yourself full of opioids. And and I tried to help in a way, like, practically, because he had issues with these opioids and he had to go and see a pain consultant. And they prescribed him oral painkillers, and I was like, he hasn't got a throat.
Yeah, like, what?
He's dying of throat cancer, you morons. Like, these things where you see how people struggle to take care of themselves without any help, without someone there, a spokesperson or someone to back them up.
Oh, they say that so much, like, and it's not that doctors don't listen, but like, to not have an advocate, you know, like,
especially if you can't speak, you literally can't speak for yourself. And so, but you'd think that was quite obvious that someone who's got
throat.
Can't swallow a pill.
Yeah, guys, think
anyway,
it through.
So I spent most of my time sort of thinking about that, the realities of the practicals, and then I started sort of dreading going, because it was a bind, and I was getting more and more pregnant, and also I had fewer things to say, because we weren't dealing with actual stuff.
No, you weren't having those conversations
anymore. It was biographical detail, which was always interesting, but it sort of ran out, and it became very obvious, well, to me anyway, that there wasn't a bond, that there wasn't anything in common, because I didn't know, I couldn't ask him questions or what he had done or what did he do all those years.
Yeah.
And obviously you could ask him about girlfriends and things, and he was forthcoming about that. But so, it became like this combination, the usual combination of guilt.
Yeah.
So I was then feeling incredibly guilty for not going to visit a father who
hadn't seen
for 37 years.
I mean, they say women can feel guilty about anything. Anyway.
Yeah, I really went for it.
Yeah.
And I would feel more
so you're pregnant anyway, so you're so... Your head is in a very strange place.
I was writing... It was the second series of Underbee.
Wow.
And I was writing that as well, so I was quite busy with that. And then... It was just this, it wasn't that I couldn't get there practically, because obviously when you don't have a child, you're so free.
Yeah.
Who knew?
So free.
It was that I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go because
I think that's fair enough. And I think people, like, I've told this story before, but I remember like the day before he died, my mum said, we're going to hospice, and I said, I didn't want to go. Because you get to this point when you're just like, I can't take
I've got
hospital. We've talked before, like, it makes you feel like you're dying. And I imagine when you're pregnant and everything is about life and growing, that's quite tricky to kind of, like, marry those things.
I think it was, if I was scared of anything, it wasn't death, weirdly. Because it didn't feel like, he was very good at playing it down. You go, it's remarkable when you think he was dying, because he was very independent in that way. And I suppose what wasn't there, or what I couldn't say, that's what was kind of making me very frustrated and unable to deal with it. Because I was like, what? Why can't I say and ask the things I need to ask? Why can't we talk about these feelings? And you go, because we weren't ever taught, I suppose. We never had the practice. I can talk about it like this, abstractly.
Yeah, of course.
But to the person who it actually involves, never, never.
And like you said, it's not Hollywood. Like,
no,
I didn't have any of those. I mean, you know, I was 15, but those conversations that I sort of wish I'd had, It's so hard when someone's dying. Like, and that's why we talk, obviously the healthy thing to do is to have this conversation with people alive and well, but you can't do that. You're too young, they're not there. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, then like you said, you're faced with death. It's like, well...
It's the practicals, isn't it? Yeah. They take over. The grim business of keeping of your body functioning.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, just clinging on to life, actually. It's sort of... And then the only time towards the end was when we were... I would always go around to his... He had this sort of one-bedroom flat. It was a social housing block. Obviously, he'd fallen out with all his neighbours, so for some issue or other. And I went round and he went, oh, just, I think he knew. He was quite angry. He went, just take anything you want. Get rid of this. Take it. Get rid of it. What to do with all this stuff? And I said, oh, I don't want, I'm not that comfortable talking about it because it means you're dying. Mm. And I sobbed. And that was the only time I'd sort of shown any emotion about it or anything.
And what did he say?
And I sort of went, oh, God, you're dying, you know, it's that realisation, and it is how final it all is, and what was weird was that I thought, I'm not going to miss you because I don't know you.
Oh God,
yeah. I would miss you as much as I would miss anyone I'd just met who was dying, in that I don't know you, and this is awful for you, but I don't know you.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just sort of, he was really kind of near the end, and he was just sort of, he just went, and then he would fall asleep, and then he texted afterwards going, sorry, I didn't want to upset you. So that was, you know, an acknowledgement. And he was so aware of me being pregnant. He was like, you don't have to come. And he had consciously was like, I don't need contact. I don't need people. I don't need people. But, you know, how on the other side of it, you go, oh, God, I feel terrible. You haven't got anyone.
And also, but like I remember said, being the time living... was limited, you know.
I remember being... living on my own for a long time and being very adamant that I really enjoyed being on my own. And I sort of did. And looking back now, I go, I'm really grateful for that period of freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sort of thought, actually, you have to respect someone when they're saying to you, I'm fine on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it sounds like a protest, it's actually, that's their decision.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I had to tell myself that because I felt was terribly sorry for him. Mm. I was like, this is your life. And then... he went into a hospice because he had trouble breathing, obviously. And then he sort of texted me going, I said, oh, is there anything I can do? And he went, oh, yeah, if you could sort out a cleaner for when I get out. And I mean, I didn't know either. I was like, okay, you know, because he'd been in a hospice before.
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't, you know, you don't just go to hospices to die. They can provide
sometimes.
Respite. Yeah, yeah.
Well, especially if you're on your own, they do take care. And he was very adamant I shouldn't go because at this point I was like 8 months pregnant.
Wow.
He was adamant I shouldn't go over and see him. It was out in Epsom or something. And I rang up on a Saturday and said, oh, can I speak to him? Or not speak to him, obviously I can't speak to him. I mean, can I visit? Because that was the other thing, I couldn't ring him, obviously. And I spoke to a nurse and she was like, oh, he said he didn't want you. He's fine, you know, he's under sedation, da da da. Because he had to be sedated, because I think when you can't breathe, all you do is panic and freak out.
Yeah.
So then the sort of texts... stopped, and then I got a call, missed call. I went away with my friend for a weekend before I had the baby, and of course, when I went away, I got the call saying he'd died.
Where were you?
I was in the Cotswolds.
Wow,
having a lovely time.
Yeah,
except then I wasn't. Because then I felt incredibly guilty.
It's so crazy, isn't it? Because like you said, you'd only just come into your life.
Yeah.
Like, but I do understand.
It's like, why didn't I just go and visit him there? I know he said not to. Why didn't I just go?
But you've been doing all that visiting as well. So your brain wants a break from it. Your brain is trying to, and you like you said, you're trying to respect someone and listen to someone you don't know. You don't know them. So you can't read, oh, I'm going to go anyway, or they don't mean it, or actually, we'll have a chat and it'll be fine. Like, there's so much stuff to make you go, oh, okay, yeah, I'll see him next week. And, you know, like the wise, sort of sensible bit of your brain is like, no, that sounds reasonable, yeah. And it is totally reasonable not to go for a weekend. And after this man has come out of nowhere. Like, it's, and that weird thing of, like you said, you meet him and there's this comfortableness because he is your dad, but that doesn't negate those years he wasn't there. Like, that's huge.
But I suppose when you understand, I guess I thought, oh, I understand why you weren't there. I understand what happened and I know why you're... I hope I can bring some sort of relief and comfort that it's fine, you know. Yeah. I don't think I said, I forgive your father.
Yeah.
Nobody did, but he didn't say, sorry, I wasn't there.
Yeah, and then also, surely your presence says that. Like, surely.
Yeah, him, hopefully.
Yeah, like you visiting and him sharing his stories is the way that you say, I'm sorry.
He, yes, he was able to explain something of his of his sort of biography.
Yeah.
And there was a moment when I was leaving and he sort of put my scarf on and kind of patted it down, and that was probably the sort of, that was him. That was the equivalent of, you know, years of dressing your children for the cold, you know. And so in a kind of microscopic sort of form, I had a father for 5 months.
That's so mad, isn't
on
it?
On and off. Yeah.
But I think those moments are really precious. I think, like, even though it's tiny.
Yeah.
I think to have that, like you said.
Well, I have a tangible sense of him.
Yeah.
And I know what he was about, and I get him.
Yeah.
And I get why and everything. So, and yeah, of course I don't resent it, because, you know, I think there are so many reasons. He wasn't doing it to be a dick. I mean, if he was a dick, it's because everyone else had been such a dick to him.
Yeah.
So I can forgive all that, really, understanding his character. But then he never lashed out at me, you know.
Yeah.
There was one moment when he got quite aggressive by text, and then obviously realised he'd gone too far. And you go, that was the reality. He had a temper and he was angry, you know, he was an angry person. So, you know, in a way we sort of skipped that as well.
So you get this phone call. Did you go to the funeral? Was there a funeral?
Well, like, this was the thing where, obviously, before he died, he was arranging everything and making sure that he had some money that he'd, I had no idea where he got it from.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I was in pieces, probably in a really good, healthy way. As in, I cried because this person had died. A person had died, and their life was over, and I was very sad about it. And I sort of sat in a very beautiful garden in the Cotswolds and had a weep. But one of my oldest friends was with me, but I couldn't talk to her about it. I just couldn't. I just can't. Well, I mean, I can now, but at the time when I was feeling it, I couldn't.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's massive. Like, I can understand that's going to take some years to get your head around what the fuck just happened to me. Like, he wasn't there. Suddenly I was absolutely part of his life, going to hospital appointments, having these moments, and now he's gone. Like, that's...
And then I went I had to go and do... Obviously, my brother was busy, so... Listen, I get it, Damo, it's fine. I'm fine with it now. I drove over... Well, I suppose I was 9 months pregnant by this point.
God.
Or whatever, you know. Very heavily pregnant. But, you know, quite mobile. I didn't have a bad pregnancy, so it wasn't... It was okay. And I drove over to Epsom, to the hospice, because I had to do the paperwork, because no matter how much you try and sort out before you die,
there's
still shit to do.
Yeah.
And you have to go and say, this person is dead. You have to register them as dead. And I went and I said, oh, and they all looked at me. The nurses were terrified.
Oh, God, She's going to fucking pop and we're not, like,
and he'd
a hospice.
Obviously said this to them as well. He was like, she can't come, she can't come. She's so pregnant, she can't come. And I went, so, you know, can I have a look? And they hadn't expected me to want to see him. And I thought, I have to.
Yeah, I have to.
I need to see him, because you don't believe it, do you?
And they say, like, that's one of the best things you can do is see the body, because it just, like, fundamentally your brain goes, okay, dead. And if you don't, there's some part of you that's like, are they?
Yeah.
And especially, I guess, for you, because he hadn't been present anyway. Yeah, so it's like, oh, he's just not here again.
It could have been, like, a very bizarre dream. And they said, okay. And they'd already put him down in cold storage, obviously, and they had to get him out. So I went off for a walk and then came back. And so sweet. They laid him out and put a sort of flower next to his head. And I went in and they'd obviously lower the lights, don't they? I mean, it's incredible how much effort they go to for a mad pregnant woman. And the nurse was there and she went, oh, do you want me to leave you? I was like, no.
No, please, God, no.
I was like, don't go away. I don't leave me with a dead person. Jesus Christ.
I want to see him, but I don't want to be alone. Fucking hell, I'm not mental.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my hand. What the hell am I doing?
That's so funny.
It was
pretty fucking spooky.
Of course.
I mean, it did look, I mean, it's such a cliche. It looked like he was having a little snooze. It did look like he was sleeping. I don't know if they'd put makeup on him or something. I don't think so. But he was just, the lights were lowered and he just looked like he was asleep. And I did touch him and he was... He didn't feel cold. He felt quite sort of soft and bristly. Because I think when your skin sinks in, your sort of bristles pop through, don't they, if you're a man. And he just felt sort of soft and asleep. And, I was just like, wow, someone I don't know and they're gone. And I did cry then, and the nurse obviously going, "Oh fucking oh, hell!" God.
She wanted me to stay, but now she's crying. Should I help her? Not help? Yeah.
I don't know whether their training is to remain entirely neutral. Yeah.
I don't know. They're normally quite good, the old hospice nurses.
I think they just didn't know what to make of me because they knew him from before, and they were obviously again thinking, "Where have you popped up from?
Who are
Why
you?
Weren't you here before?" Anyway, so then I took a picture.
Why not?
I thought it's one of those things I really would regret not taking pictures. So he's on my photo stream.
Oh my God.
That's the only picture I have of him.
Wow.
Because weirdly, all those times I went to see him, we didn't
take a picture.
I didn't take a picture.
Yeah.
It felt really weird to ask, can I have a picture, please?
Yeah.
With you, dying man.
Yeah.
Or of all of us together or anything like that. I just felt really odd. An odd imposition.
Mm.
And of that generation, he didn't have a camera. He didn't have a camera phone.
No.
Or maybe he did, but he didn't use it. Anyway, so then I had a picture. And then I went to you have to do the admin thing and say, this person is dead. Always people looking at me going, oh, fucking hell, she's so pregnant.
please don't give birth while you register this death. We don't want a Hollywood film, please.
And then obviously we had to clear out his flat. And it was only a small flat. And I said to my brother, do you want to come and help? Oh, God, I feel you're all bad timing.
It's just this weekend. It's really tough.
So, 9 months pregnant.
Oh, my God, you did it by yourself.
I cleared out his flat. Obviously, my partner, Tom, he came along. He helped. He was very useful because he obviously can carry heavy things. The British Heart Foundation came and took some stuff away. And I went through all his effects. And, I mean, that was pretty fucking devastating. You go, this is what you amount to.
Mm.
This is your life in, and like me, he was quite anally retentive about keeping records and things filed. So he had all his sort of letters and hospital appointments and all this kind of stuff. So from that, I kind of gleaned a sort of mini biography of filling in the gaps by sort of pouring through all this stuff.
God, that must have been so emotional and you're like about to pop at any minute.
Yeah, that was pretty, and that was my due date. It was basically my due date when all this was happening.
Oh my God, Veronica. Fucking hell.
And I was, but everyone was very kind of, obviously people are kind. And then the guys from the social housing came along and sort of again looked at me and went, oh, Jesus Christ. Everyone just, I remember, because I thought, look back, I thought, why is everyone acting so weird? You go, because there's a mad pregnant woman going, so my father's died. What do I sign? Is everything okay? Do I have to pay for any sort
people
of
just
water
really,
bills?
Yeah, really panic at the sight of a very pregnant woman. Like that's I'm sure why in the old days they were ushered away.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, it's so frightening. It's like, oh God.
You're so leaky and incontinent.
What's
and you're
going to
burst all over the place.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't. But the best bit was that my father, he was so sort of prosaic and there is no afterlife. There is nothing. We are nothing. Kind of taken to its extreme. I spoke to the undertakers. He'd arranged all that. And I said, oh, okay, well, I don't know what his plans were or anything. And the undertaker went, oh, well, he's written here. Put me in a box and burn me. he's a man after my own heart. And this is from the funeral director. Because he's like, we are just bodies. Like, I don't know why people make such a fuss. Like, because he's obviously processed so many bodies.
Yeah,
he's like,
done with it.
Come on.
Come on, guys.
So put me in a box and burn me was his instruction.
That is an incredible thing to write down.
Yeah.
And also it's quite funny.
It is funny. I think he was a funny man.
Yeah, and especially like you being a very funny person, that's quite a funny thing to write down.
Yeah.
That I sort of think there's definitely... I think there's a sense of awareness that someone's going to read that out and think... Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, definitely there's an audience.
Yeah, there's an audience for that statement, isn't there? Yeah.
I think when he was, you know, on his sort of pissed tirades, there was always an audience. And I think he enjoyed that. So, yeah, put me in a box and burn me. So no funeral, no nothing.
So nothing.
No readings, nothing. But what he hadn't thought of was what to do with
the ashes. Yeah, yeah.
He'd failed to...
Equipped for that.
No. Yeah. Chuck me in the sea. Forget me. So I've still got them.
You still got them.
They're sitting in a cupboard next to the boiler.
My dad was in the wardrobe for 10 years.
Was he? 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
Did he not say what he wanted?
He said something. My mum said, oh, I didn't believe him. He said a few things, changed his mind. Because he was very like, I'm not dying, so why are we talking about it?
Yeah.
So then he was like, oh, just take me here or take me there. And then eventually, I think we were like, oh, okay, probably go and scatter them in Wales. That's probably a nice thing to do. That's where he was from. Seems reasonable.
Yeah.
But yeah, for a long time he was in my mum's wardrobe.
Well, I thought I'd keep him there for like, keep him on hand for like maybe the 37 years I didn't see him. And once that's squared, then it's time, time to go. It's like he's catching up.
That's hilarious.
For all the missed moments.
Yeah, tough shit, mate. You went around and now you're going to be. Keep you in the boiler, you're warm.
Yeah,
you're
warm and cosy.
But you're going to be part of this family now. That's hilarious, Veronica. Why not?
So my brother did come with me to pick up the ashes eventually because it took me about a month. Actually, no, it took me longer, didn't it? Because I had
a baby. Yeah, so lazy, Veronica. Honestly, get off that bed. Pick up your uterus and your umbilical cord and get the ashes.
I remember I said that to the funeral director. I was like, oh, the thing is, I'm due to have a baby any minute, so I might be a while before I pick them up. He went, take your time.
Please don't come in here again with your massive bump that scares me. Wow. So then you and your brother went to pick... How was that when you went to pick them up? Did it feel, or did it just feel like, that's what we're doing?
Well, it was in the car and that car that I'd driven my father in, and that was he left a note afterwards. He'd written a note to me. This was that hospital appointment that I took him on, and he went, this is like... He said something along the lines of, this is like the closest we've got to being father and daughter.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like a proper father-daughter day with me driving him to hospital, him telling me off for not listening to him about the parking meter. And that was sort of, that was, so that car meant a lot actually, that was the car that I'd sort of wheeled him around in, and then I went to pick him up
in
his ashes.
Car,
and, the car then died on the side of the M27 when Maud was a tiny baby. That was quite traumatic.
Of course it is.
So that car's gone. But so I went with my brother, and he's sort of, you don't know what he's thinking or feeling. He's not allowed to have thoughts or feelings because, you know, that gets you hurt. So what was interesting was that the funeral director who was in the parlour, are they still called parlours these days?
That bit, yeah.
In the parlour? No, she was just in the shop, in the death shop.
Yeah.
And she said, it was interesting, we got talking and she hadn't spoken to her mother for God knows how many years, because I wasn't speaking to my mother at this time as well. And we had this, it was an interesting sort of bonding kind of, parents, what are parents? Who are these people that made you, but you have no actual connection or kinship with, really? And your friends and your loved ones that you make, the family you make, is much more what it's about. But there was a thing where that was all right, I suppose, by then, because I had Maud, I'd had a baby, and in a way that totally sort of negates whatever sort of feelings of woe and despair, that actually you go, it was sort of the best timing to lose a parent, even if you didn't know them, was when you're about to have a baby. I remember there was a bit when I went into labour at the early stages, which I thought were serious contractions, which actually turned out just the time.
You haven't got a fucking clue. Exactly.
And I remember walking around the park in the rain, because I had to walk, and I was sort of bending over, and it was agony, and then I started crying, and it wasn't the pain. It was just, I thought, oh, but this is pain for, I'm having a baby, and my father had this pain, and it was just the end of life pain, and his pain was for nothing, and he went through this agony. And I think that was the last time I sort of wept for him, because after that I was just then weeping for myself, because I just had a baby. It was overwhelming.
Fucking overwhelming and painful in a lot of different places.
So I cried for him, and I think that was the healthiest part of the whole story, was that I could cry then, and I could feel it, and I could properly process it and go, that was it, that was my father. And then, but then it did sort of, it does carry on, because I met up with his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
And she was brilliant and entertaining. I think if my father had been less sort of self-loathing, she would have been a good partner for the rest of his life, because she likes to drink as well.
But that's
booze
amazing.
booze buddy
but
and then she said he went on and had another girlfriend who was like really violent and abusive.
Oh god.
Who I think burnt most of his stuff. Like, he didn't have any photos or anything like that.
Wow.
Certainly not of us from when we were babies. And I gave him a pile of baby photos once, and he sort of went, oh, and he didn't really look at them. And then I think he had looked at them, because when I went through all these things, I opened his diary, which obviously had no appointments in it apart from hospital appointments, because he had no friends. There was a picture of my mother from when they'd been together. So he kept that one from the pile of photos I'd given him. Unless he just had it. But it was, you know, it was my mother when they'd met. And she was sort of very glamorous and beautiful, and I think he really did love her, or he tried to.
Yeah.
And he tried to make it work, but she was chaotic, and he was angry and couldn't process anything.
Yeah.
And So it's kind of the bit that makes me feel so sorry for him, or for them, or for us even. It's just this kind of, it would have been so easy to find love for each other, but they just didn't know how, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's
and that's the thing that made me saddest, was, you know, the love that he should have and could have found for his children that might have helped him and sort of enriched his life. Not that I'm saying we're amazing, but he didn't have the capacity. And how that is sort of, obviously it's very common and the source of most hate and pain in the world is the fact that people just cannot connect and make that connection and enjoy feeling happy, good feelings, because they're terrified, I guess, or they're not allowed to. So there you go. That was a very bizarre experience of the loss of my father.
That's incredible, Bronco.
The finding and the loss.
That is...
In the space of 5 months.
Like... You say it's not a Hollywood film, but it definitely feels like a British gritty film.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Well, there are no
It hasn't got the Hollywood touches, but there's definitely, like, when you've walked out the cinema, you're like, oh, I was really good, but, like, I feel quite, like...
I feel quite drained.
Yeah, I feel quite drained. But I did think it was a good story, but, like, oh, yeah, because it just, fucking hell, what... I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing that you guys found each other, that he did eventually reach out.
Yeah.
And that you were emotionally evolved enough to go, okay, I'm going to take your hand because it's outstretched and I'm going to be for you in this, whatever capacity, no, not Hollywood father and daughter, but in the true sense of the complicated nature of parents and children and what it feels like, and just have those moments without judgment. And I think a credit to you, really, and whoever, like you said, these people that made you, I think your mum and dad are quite lucky that you've turned out the way you have. That you were able to walk into that situation and go, yeah, all right, I'll be here for you. Because he must have wanted that somehow.
Yeah, I think so.
He reached out.
He was grateful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad that my brother couldn't do the same, because I think that's what he was really after. And I've squared my, you know, I don't mind that.
But
I understand
it.
But
it's like... People go looking for things and then you don't always get what you expect, but that doesn't mean it's shit. Do you know what I mean?
I just remembered another thing. When there was a story from when my brother was a kid and my father had sort of trampled his model aeroplane, you know, in some fit of anger. And it was a story my grandmother loved to tell, obviously, because it painted him in a terrible light. And he, for Christmas, he asked me to help him order a gift for my brother, which was a model aeroplane.
Oh, my God.
So he never said why. He just said, oh, I want to get him this. I was like, I don't think, you know, he's 46.
He's past that, but cool. You're dying. Whatever.
What do you think?
But like, so you said how he'd obviously kept that pain.
He knew,
absolutely.
He knew
boxed.
He'd done a bad thing.
Yeah.
And he had the guilt, because obviously he's a Catholic originally,
yeah,
whether he wanted to be or not. So yeah, there were these little moments where you go, well, I totally got it. I knew, and I knew why it all happened that way. But it was still really quite... sad to have never sort of got the opportunity to explore it
longer and more.
But in a way, also ideal, because you go in that pocket where you forgive so much because somebody's dying. So there was no baggage or resentment.
Mm.
It was just about this dying man and trying to make things okay. So, yeah.
I just think it's a really incredible...
And then I had a baby!
And then you had a baby. Then you had a baby. Well, thank you. So much.
Thank you very much.
About Seamus Augustus. Augustine. Augustine.
Named after the horrific church father that told us women are all blood and shit and horrors of menstruation and unworthy. So
amazing.
Nice to be named after him.
Lovely. Well, like, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You can't follow Bronca on social media because she's one of those cool people who is not on it. Congratulations, Bronca. But you can watch Time Wasters, the ITV2 show that she co-wrote, and you can watch just IMDb her, guys, and see all the amazing things she's worked on and just work through the back catalogue. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.